The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Hipsterbia. As millennials flock to Raleigh and Durham's urban core, others seek refuge in neighboring communities built like small towns with offices, retail, parks, and high-tech homes. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, The Rush to Hipsterbia, Built to Last. From Wendell to Chapel Hill and beyond, the trend in real estate is to develop places where people can live, work, play, and stay. And this article is written by Caleb Harshberger. In 2017, Jack and Martha Nails planned to wait 1 year to buy a house. Then they visited Wendell Falls. We had agreed we were a year away from moving, but she wanted to look at houses, and I thought, it's a cheap weekend date, Jack Nails says. The first home we saw, the realtor came by and let us in, and we bought the house. We weren't planning on buying, but we fell in love with the house. Didn't look at any others. Haven't regretted it. For Jack, 63, and Martha, 60, their new home had just about everything they were looking for. Proximity to Jack's two children in Wilson and Johnston counties, access to area amenities and nearby shops, and a large open layout at just a little over $300,000. I've never seen anything like it, Jack Nail says. It's really great. After just one visit, the couple soon joined the growing number of people flocking to the newest trend in suburban development, Hipsterbia. And while the name might make it sound like these spaces are packed with millennials, in fact, the trend is attracting a wide range of ages. Unlike traditional suburban subdivisions, Wendell Falls is one of a growing list of communities in the Triangle and around the country to design walkable master-planned communities featuring a wide variety of residential offerings, interspersed with amenities and retailers with plans to add entertainment and office space as the community grows. The overall effect is to create a sort of town within a town, hearkening back to a time of small towns offering a self-sustainable live-work-play environment where residents were within walking distance from all their needs. Over the years, these communities have sold thousands of homes as residents across the region flock to communities with all the amenities of an urban core without the challenges of city living. Coined in 2013 in the New York Times, the term Hipsterbia refers to renewed interest in suburban placemaking and walkable destination development. As young families and others found themselves priced out of Manhattan and even Brooklyn, they fanned to traditional suburbs and began seeking the same cosmopolitan options as in the city. In its annual Emerging Trends report, the Urban Land Institute named it as one of the leading trends in suburban development. Cities and their suburbs have evolved tremendously since the mid-1990s, the report says, and the proof of concept of live-work-play has long since been established in the sociological sense of lifestyle preferences and has also been validated in terms of superior real estate investment returns. If the live-work-play formula could revive inner cities a quarter century ago, the report reads, there is no reason to think that it won't work in suburbs with the right bones and the will to succeed. Both established suburbs and developers have seized on this trend. Wendell Falls, developed by San Diego-based Newland and entitled for 4,000 homes, priced from the $200,000s to the $600,000s, is just one of the most recent developments in the Triangle to capitalize on it. We love it. It's like living in a resort community, Jack Nail says. It has all the small town charm and you're not surrounded by the city. A destination in waiting. Typically, these communities and developments have sprouted as downtowns and surrounding urban areas have priced out residents looking for a walkable place to live while staying within their means. And these communities vary from massive developments planned and built by a single developer to whole towns that grew organically over the decades. Of the Triangle's many small towns and suburbs, one of the most indicative and oldest communities to embody these Hipsterbian values is the town of Carrboro, adjacent to the more expensive Chapel Hill. Residential neighborhoods and multifamily communities wrap around the town's bustling downtown, packed with thriving local businesses and teeming with residents and visitors. Mayor Lydia Lavelle says much of this has been developing in Carrboro for years, while many communities around the region have only just begun seeing the development of condos and apartments geared to attract younger residents. "It's almost like we were already doing that," Lavelle says. "We don't have the skyscrapers or the really tall buildings that cities have, or even the suburbs are building. We very much have encouraged development that has encouraged people to live near places they can shop, get a bite to eat, places where they don't need to get into their car and drive there. This is something that's evolved in Carrboro in the last 20 years or so." Economic and Development Director Annette Stone says the seeds were planted in the 1980s when town officials loosened restrictions on dense residential development to allow for more multifamily development. "That really changed the demographics of the town and really changed the complexion of the town," she says. New residents flooded in. "This is when it really started to get the progressive vibe that it has," Stone says. "It really started changing things. The town started focusing on bike lanes, mobility in general. We've kind of been on the forefront of that." All of these new people needed places to shop, and the Carrboro business community was ready to grow to meet their needs, often with support from the town. "We've supported our local businesses, tried to keep them there, and help them as they've expanded," Lavelle says. Meanwhile, other towns have started to take notice of the benefits of mixed-use destination qualities and have begun to take a similar tact. Rollsville, for example, passed its Main Street Vision Plan a few years ago in the hopes of attracting new retailers and restaurants. Michael McFarlane, the town's community and economic development manager, says the goal was to create a sense of place for residents and visitors to shop and eat. Already, at least one developer has proposed an 800-unit mixed-use community in town, depending on the success of some of Rollsville's infrastructure plans. Meanwhile, thousands of new homes are planned for that area in the coming year. Developers jumps in. Today, much of the hipsterbian development in the Triangle is done by developers who, rather than wait for a town to sprout organically, will simply buy the land needed, often hundreds and sometimes thousands of acres, and plan it themselves. Among the earliest was Southern Village in Chapel Hill, which was built in the 1990s in the new urbanism model of mixed-use placemaking. Developer D.R. Bryan visited sites around the United States and also visited Pienza, Italy, to see its classic main square that was built during the Renaissance. Southern Village features a wide variety of commercial and residential offerings, with everything from local shops and restaurants to hotels, apartment complexes, and a movie theater. Interest in the development, which features 1,100 homes, of which about 500 are single-family homes, is intense. Local real estate websites currently list no single-family homes for sale in the development. Last year, only 26 single-family homes sold in the development, and the average days on the market was 26, or less than 4 weeks. That compares to 26 homes sold in 2018, 35 in 2017, and 41 in 2016. And all commercial and property in Southern Village is under lease, according to Bryan Properties. In 2017, the developers behind the project announced the opening of a 110-room, 5-story Hyatt Place Hotel, which the developers had planned to add since starting the project in the mid-1990s. Other developers have since followed in Southern Village's footsteps, building and opening their own mixed-use destinations. In 2008, Newland began work on Briar Chapel, its first development in the region. The company's style is to buy and entitle the land, install much of the needed infrastructure, and sell the all-but-developed land to home builders or commercial developers. This allows Newland to maintain control of the overall build-out of the plan through how the property is entitled and through which developers they choose to partner with without requiring the company to do the building. It also allows its partners to get started quickly on land that needs no new entitlements and often needs no additional infrastructure. When multifamily developer Blue Heron announced its latest apartment project in Briar Chapel, company project manager Kevin Wade said all this made the community an attractive place to build. From a feasibility standpoint, Newland has laid an enormous amount of groundwork working with the local government and laying in the infrastructure, he says. You can look around at the Triangle and see how many of these communities there are, and it kind of proves out the attraction for tenants. And people want to live in these communities, and that's attractive for us. For the Nails, one of the biggest advantages they've experienced is the strong community forming in the burgeoning development. I know more neighbors here than I've known anywhere else I've lived in my life, Nail says. There are always parties and get-togethers and potlucks we're having on our street. Neighbors, often with the help of the Homeowners Association, have formed a wide variety of clubs and groups for residents interested in everything from reading and parenting to fitness and exercise. And while the term hipsterbia is often associated with the younger generation of homebuyers, in practice, these communities host a wide variety of residents of all generations. In Briar Chapel, developers unveiled a new age-restricted apartment community planned for the development. And in Wendell Falls, Jack Nail says the wide generational variety has made the community more vibrant. We wanted to live in a neighborhood of people with different ages and backgrounds and everything, he says. This has it. It has retirees, new families. It's just a great mixture of everybody, and it just adds to what we enjoy about being here. Impressive results. For developers and master planners in the Triangle, the hipsterbia recipe appears to be working. Newland continues to announce new projects and developments planned at Briar Chapel and Wendell Falls as home sales continue. Michael Ciciani, Vice President of Operations for Newland, says much of the commercial demand can be explained by the convenience and speed with which a developer can go from the planning phases to breaking ground. There's not a lot in the submarket that can support the kind of development we have, he says. With Blue Heron's new apartment community, Briar Chapel is built out in terms of multifamily product, though Newland is still working with commercial developers to fill out the remaining retail space, with the potential for a new grocer to announce its plans to join the community in the near future. In Wendell Falls, home sales have been strong, with 2018 sales surpassing the previous year by 30%. And 2019 sales on track for another double-digit bump from 2018. Even Southern Village, after two decades of development, seems to see no decrease in popularity from prospective homebuyers. Last year, the community came in as the 21st fastest-selling neighborhood, with all homes averaging 4 days on market, despite an average price above $500,000. More projects planned. Across the Triangle, developers are filing plans for new developments featuring live-work-play walkable designs. In Johnston County, Kevin Doherty's Adventure Development has been accumulating 470 acres to build Eastfield Crossing, a 2.8 million square foot development stretching between exits 97 and 98 along I-95 outside of Selma. Holly Springs has several proposed, including the Chandler Property Group's Green Oaks West, the Spalding Group's Village Gate, and Shenandoah Homes, and Lennar Corporation's Carolina Springs. Perhaps the largest is in Pittsboro, where the Preston Development Company is developing the 7,100-acre Chatham Park. Construction already began on the commercial gateway called Mosaic, and work on the first homes is set to begin this year. Meanwhile, in the 2 years since the Nails moved into Wendell Falls, much has changed. What was once acres of trees and vacant land across the street has become a long row of houses, with many more on the way. Still, Jack Nail says they knew these changes were coming and that it's good to know they'll be coming as a part of a larger cohesive plan for the community. We're definitely seeing the traffic getting more congested, and we expect that to continue, he says. But you can see the development has been given a lot of thought in how it was laid out, and you get the sense the growth was anticipated and it'll be managed. Today, he says, they are thrilled with their decision to buy in Wendell Falls. Love at first sight, he says. We're two blocks from the Farmhouse Cafe, which also has the swimming pool and the gym. It's just been great. We've enticed at least one friend to move out here. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Mill condos are desired locations in the city of Oaks. Raleigh, as the capital city, has never been known as a mill town, but two mills that date back to the 1800s have become hot places to live as interest in living near the city core rises. The Cotton Mill, which dates from 1890 and is across Peace Street from the Smoky Hollow development, was converted from a dilapidated building into 50 condos in 1996. Right now, the only unit on the market is a 2,400-square-foot space with an asking price of $750,000 or just over $311 per square foot. Kimberly Conroy, the listing agent for Coldwell Banker Howard Perry in Walston, says another cotton mill unit just sold for $313 per square foot. which shows that these condos can command that price. They have a lot of character, she says. In South Raleigh, the Carolee Textile Mill opened in 1892. Developer Vaughn King acquired the mill after it closed for good in 1999 and began developing condos. At that time, the Carolee Mills project, with 84 units, was a bold venture into a part of town that was largely run down. All that is changing now, with new three-story townhomes rising next to Carolee and Dix Park, only a few blocks away. Kyle Eckenrode, who lived in Carolee for years and is a local broker who connects buyers and sellers, says the only unit coming available is a 1,600-square-foot condo, likely to list for around $415,000. There are only two mills in the whole area. Ours is different than the other, the cotton mill, because there is more exposed brick, Eckenrode says. It's really the only true mill-feeling building, and so many people coming from the north and out west love that. Good news, great seats available for Clemson-LSU game. If you're thinking about bolting to the Big Easy for the college football championship game January 13, you're in luck. Great seats are available. In fact, StubHub says you can grab a pair of seats in the sixth row of section 142 right behind the Clemson University bench, and it will only cost you $6,664. Or you could skip the game, head to Café du Monde and buy 10,748 beignets for you and your closest friends. Your call. North Carolina Zoo has a record year. 2019 was a big year for the North Carolina Zoo in Asheboro, which reported record attendance for the period. The zoo hosted 917,309 visitors last year, an increase of some 85,000 over 2018. Zoo attendance was down in 2018 from 2017 after heavy rainfalls caused by hurricanes Florence and Michael caused the zoo to close for multiple days. The North Carolina Zoo, located roughly 80 miles west of Raleigh, is home to more than 1,800 animals and 52,000 plants. Raleigh advertising couple makes a move to Boone. Moving up in the world of advertising takes savvy and persistence, and one couple that found a way forward in Raleigh was Jeremy and Natalie Perkins Holden. Natalie Holden founded the Clean Advertising Agency in 2007, and Jeremy Holden joined in 2013. But in June, they brought in Lee Davis as the first managing director. The Holdens have since moved to Boone, and Davis will take over as owner of the company, they told friends and associates in an email. After living in Raleigh for nearly 20 years and raising our family there, we decided that it was time for us to move on to the next phase of our life together, Natalie Holden wrote. We still own our company, Clean, and have found the perfect person to take over running it, Lee Davis. In fact, he's so perfect, he's now a partner, and we are planning to transition ownership to him. Jeremy and I are officially in semi-retirement. Serial entrepreneur Allen's new startup. Entrepreneur Robbie Allen is launching a new startup again. His new company is Startomatic, which seeks to help startups through the same challenges Allen has faced. He was a Cisco engineer, joining as an intern in 1997, and thought he'd spend his career there. But after finishing graduate school at MIT, Allen wanted to combine his interests in programming and UNC Chapel Hill basketball and created StatSheet, which tracked all sorts of sports statistics. That became Automated Insights, which he sold to Vista Equity Partners Stats Incorporated in 2015. I had a great experience starting a company, Allen recalls. I didn't do it until I was in my 30s, mostly because I didn't know starting a company was something that was available for me to do, because I grew up in a very non-entrepreneurial household. After the exit, he eventually led machine learning firm Infinia ML. I think there are a lot of other Robbie Allens that could be starting companies if they had the right amount of support, Allen says. There's not a lot of technology oriented toward getting companies off the ground. And finally, in a section called No Thanks, Chick-fil-A tries out limited menu. Here at Biz, we're hardly ones to question the success of Chick-fil-A, but an experiment by the company caught our attention. Chick-fil-A is testing a modified menu at some restaurants around Charlotte and in Arizona starting January 13. Those restaurants will have menus that lack breakfast sausage, side salads, and even decaf coffee. We get it on decaf coffee and even side salads, but no sausage for breakfast in North Carolina. Have fun, Charlotte. And now we turn to the page written by Lauren Onasorge, on tech, startups, and transportation. Truist CEO says Triangle is a key market. The new CEO of Truist Financial insists he isn't worried about competition, even from J.P. Morgan Chase. No, Kelly King says, I don't think that J.P. Morgan keeps me up at night. King, the CEO after the SunTrust and BB&T merger, addressed the North Carolina Economic Forecast Forum on January 7. He promised the Triangle would continue to be a major priority for the new and much bigger bank that will have its headquarters in Charlotte. We are a substantial economic factor in the Triangle, and you know, the Triangle is very, very important to us, says King, who grew up on a Zebulon tobacco farm and got his undergraduate and MBA degrees at East Carolina University. He notes that the new bank has the scaling power of a big bank, but the community focus of a smaller bank. Most decisions made by Truist will be made by regional teams, King says, and he sees technology as a huge priority for Truist. The real genius of banking today is marrying technology and touch together, he says. As for the merger itself, integration is on track, King says. We've not had any big hiccups, he adds. Distill Network's co-founder tapped for Raleigh startup. Rami Asad, the co-founder of Distill Networks, is back with a new startup and a new $2 million in funding. This time, it's Raleigh-based Insight Finder, which just announced the raise, led by Durham's Idea Fund Partners. The startup provides machine learning technology aimed at predicting potential incidents and preventing service outages. And Asad, who will be leading operations for the company, says the funder is all about scale. Asad is a familiar name in the Triangle, as Distill Networks was on a Raleigh growth spurt when it was acquired over the summer. Cybersecurity firm Imperva acquired Distill, and when the deal closed in July, Asad thought he'd take some time off. He stepped aside from the company he co-founded, but the break would be short-lived. Idle hands, he says with a laugh. I did too many home projects and I got kicked out of the house, but honestly, this company is really, really interesting to me. That's where Insight Finder came in, checking all the boxes for Asad. Initially, he learned about the firm from Lister Delgado, a partner at Idea Fund Partners. Idea was one of Distill's investors, and Asad, newly out of Distill, had just transitioned to a venture partner role at the company. Insight Finder was one of the prospects he was to evaluate for potential funding. But during the process, it was clear the company needed a leader, Asad says. Delgado said the firm wouldn't invest until you lead, he recalls. And that's how I got into it, Asad says. Chung says North Carolina still offers more than competitors. Chris Chung, CEO of the state's top recruiting engine, the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, says he expects the state to continue to compete for job-creating projects in 2020. Speaking weeks after Microsoft tapped Mooresville for a 500-job expansion at the North Carolina Economic Forecast Forum on January 7, Chung says North Carolina is consistently winning projects over South Carolina. That's a one-trick pony state, he says, of North Carolina's neighbor to the south, noting that they cannot touch us, he says, in areas such as technology and life sciences. Let's ignore this notion that we're surrounded by states that are going to eat our lunch every day, Chung says. But he says he wouldn't be surprised to see some slowness this year simply due to the presidential election cycle. It's always a given that every 4 years you do start to see a little hesitancy, Chung says. It makes sense that they may want to hedge their bets. What insiders walked away with in 2019? Top executives in the Triangle walked away with tens of millions of dollars in insider stock sales in 2019. The big winners were across the board and had ties to Equivia and, unsurprisingly, Red Hat. Red Hat was bought out by IBM in a $34 billion deal last year. The top five insider stock sales of 2019, John Connaughton, director, sold Equivia's shares valued at more than $122.3 million March 12. Connaughton sold Equivia shares worth $89.9 million August 12. Jim Whitehurst, CEO of Red Hat, reported a disposition back to issuer valued at $50.1 million July 9. Paul Cormier, president of products and technologies at Red Hat, reported a disposition back to the issuer valued at $39 million July 9. Aaron Oberoi, Executive Vice President of Global Sales and Services at Red Hat, reported a disposition back to issuer valued at $26.8 million July 9. And Ari Boosbib, CEO of Equivia, exercised in the money securities to sell shares valued at $15.4 million. He also exercised in the money securities to sell Equivia shares valued at $14.4 million June 21. Boosbib exercised in the money securities in an Equivia stock deal worth more than $13.5 million March 27. He also exercised in the money securities in an Equivia stock deal worth more than $13.4 million on February 19. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Caleb Harshberger's page on real estate. Construction to begin on latest phase of Morrisville Office Park. Construction will begin this month on the latest phase of a large-scale Morrisville office park, and a current tenant plans to lease a significant portion of the new building. FCP of Chevy Chase, Maryland, and Strategic Capital Partners of Indianapolis announced January 6 that construction has begun on 40540 Phase 2, with plans for a five-story, 198,535-square-foot Class A office building situated on 16.2 acres at 710 Slater Road, overlooking the Interstate 40-540 interchange. The expected delivery date is mid-2021. The company's also unveiled the building's first tenant, Solar Winds, which has pre-leased 80,000 square feet, or 40% of the building. "We are excited that Solar Winds has chosen to expand at 4542. It is yet another example of a technology company choosing to expand in Raleigh and the RTP I-40 submarket," says Strategic Capital Partners CEO Rich Horn. "We look forward to moving them into their new facility in the summer of 2021. Solar Winds is an IT management software provider and also leases space in 4540 Phase 1. It relocated there in early 2018 from its offices in Durham. The company is based in Austin, Texas, and has offices all over the world. It entered the Triangle market in 2016 when it acquired a company called Logic Now. JLL represented Solar Winds in the latest lease, and CBRE represented the landlords. 4540 Phase 2 will feature 41,000 square feet of efficient floor plates, signage opportunities, and other amenities, including a fitness center, showers, and a rooftop sky lounge. The RTP I-40 submarket continues to flourish based on the growth of the region and the central location near Raleigh-Durham International Airport," says Kevin North of FCP. "We are very pleased to build on the success with our partners at SCP, as well as the team at CBRE, with the development of this exceptional new office building. The first phase of 4540 opened in 2017 and features a similar five-story, 200,000-square-foot Class A office building. Golden Corral moving headquarters to new development near PNC Arena. After four decades on Raleigh's Glenwood Avenue, Golden Corral plans to move to a new headquarters by the end of the year. But it won't be going far. Golden Corral has signed on to 42,500 square feet at Palisades 3, a new office building under construction off Trinity Road in West Raleigh, the company said this month. "As we near our 50th year, we are excited to move to a new space that enables our franchise-centric organization to thrive for years to come," says Lance Trenery, Golden Corral president and CEO. A Golden Corral representative says the move is to update and improve the work environment for our current team while building for our future workforce. Golden Corral currently has 131 employees at its headquarters at 5151 Glenwood Avenue, not far from Crabtree Valley Mall. Keystone Corporation is developing the building, and work began last year. The company expects work to be finished by the end of 2020. The property site totals 5.6 acres at 5401 Trinity Road, south of Wade Avenue, and west of Edwards Mill Road. New details emerge for South Raleigh retail project. New details have emerged about a retail destination proposed for South Raleigh. Merge Capital is planning roughly 60,000 square feet of retail space situated at 1310 South Person Street, four blocks south of Shaw University. "We feel like Raleigh is moving to the south," says Chris Woody, Merge Capital managing partner. "This was a larger piece of property we were able to acquire to do a bit more of a transformational project here." The company filed plans for the first phase last month, calling for nearly 30,000 square feet of retail space, and is in the early stages for the second phase. The working name, for now, is South Park. Former Canes player to lead Triangle expansion. A Minneapolis real estate investment company has announced its expansion into the Triangle, with a former Carolina Hurricane chosen to lead its local office. Opidan Investment Company, that's spelled O-P-P-I-D-A-N, has tapped local real estate broker Tim Brent as its executive vice president for the Southeast region. The company said January 6 it already has two projects in the works to bring hundreds of apartments to Raleigh and Cary. Brent previously worked at NAI Carroll Atlantic following a 12-year career playing professional hockey. He was with the Hurricanes from 2011 to 2013. Raised in a small Canadian town, Brent says he got his start investing in real estate when he was a teenager. "When I signed my first NHL hockey contract, I got a signing bonus," he says. "I didn't have much stock market knowledge. I was 19, so I decided to invest in real estate. It was something tangible. It was something I could touch and walk on." Brent continued investing over the course of his NHL career and decided to go into the industry full-time once his playing days were over. 4 years ago, he joined NAI Carroll Atlantic as a broker. Brent says he was thinking about transitioning into the development side of the industry, and then Opidan came calling about a new opportunity. "Opidan was a great client of mine as a broker," he says. "The fit with the people and the culture there really lined up." And finally, million-dollar townhome set for Durham. Developers have begun work on a new luxury townhome community in Durham with homes priced as high as seven figures. The Florian Companies of Raleigh and development partner Carolina Commercial Investment Companies have secured funding and started work on the terraces of Moorhead Hill, a high-end community on the edge of downtown Durham. Plans call for 25 townhomes, each two stories with a rooftop terrace. Prices will range from the $780,000 to $1 million, depending on a buyer's chosen home package. Floor plans range from 3,372 to 3,998 square feet, with each home coming with a two-car garage and the option for an elevator and other high-end features. The project is situated at 383 Willard Street, south of the Durham Freeway, and within walking distance to the American Tobacco Campus and downtown Durham. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Education page, written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. Growth mergers expected in Triangle's CRO industry. One of the Triangle's defining industries, contract research organizations, or CROs, is continuing to grow as the industry expands into new sectors of technology and data. Since the 1980s, CROs, which represent a wide array of companies providing clinical and research support services for drug development, have exploded in the region, and local stakeholders say nurturing that growth is key. According to data provided by the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, the Triangle is home to 151 contract research and testing companies. Those companies employ about 24,250, a 12.5% increase since 2014. Experts expect that number to continue growing as the industry at large enters a transformative period. Vivian Doling, the Vice President of Emerging Company Development at NC Biotech, says that in the coming years, the CRO industry will merge more into the technology sector. "The CRO industry is now merging with database companies," she says, pointing to IQVIA as an example. "They're merging so they have better use of data, primarily to access patients for clinical trials." Part of that, Doling says, is that bigger firms will continue to gobble up smaller CROs to gain added expertise and technology. "There's going to be some merger and acquisition," she says. "It's already happening with some of the smaller CROs." After rough 2019, a look at the future for med device firm. The annual report for Transenterix, a Research Triangle Park-based surgical robot maker, shows it is entering 2020 on thin ice, though its new CEO says he still believes it has a shot. Starting last year with its stock trading as high as $42 per share, lackluster sales of its surgical robot brought stock as low as 13 cents per share before year end. though a reverse stock split raised it back to a closing price of $1.43 on January 7. The company's hardship included its CEO, Todd Pope, and Chief Financial Officer stepping down in the final months of the year. Still, new CEO Anthony Fernando said the company is on the cusp of transformative technologies. But according to its year-end update with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the company may be running out of time with only a limited amount of cash on hand. And under that, there's some numbers. $600,000 revenue for the December 31 quarter and $10.6 million cash and cash equivalents of the company as of December 31. Novan stock plummets after disappointing results in clinical trial. Morrisville-based Novan stock crashed following poor trial results, but company officials plan to move forward with their lead drug candidate. Novan saw its stock drop more than 70% January 3, following the release of trial data regarding drug candidate SB206. A treatment of molluscum contagiosum, a viral skin infection. The trial, dubbed B-Simple-1, BS1, and B-Simple-2, BS2, failed to achieve statistically significant results for the primary endpoint of the trial, which was the clearance of molluscum at week 12 of treatment. According to the data provided by the company, about 31% of patients in BS1 reported clearance at 12 weeks, compared to 21% in the control group. In BS2, 36% of patients reported clearance, compared to 23% in control. President and COO Paula Brown Stafford called the results obviously disappointing for the company and our shareholders. Brown is slated to take over as CEO of Novan next month. And in a section called The Big Number, down 70%, the percentage that Novan's stock price dropped on January 3 following the release of trial data regarding its main drug, SB206, a treatment of molluscum contagiosum, a viral skin infection. Triangle CROs form collaboration with NC colleges. The Triangle's largest contract research organizations have formed a collaboration with North Carolina universities and research sites to collectively address common issues and nurture the local industry. The North Carolina CRO Collaborative is composed of 17 key entities in the CRO space, which continues to expand in the Triangle. The collaborative was sparked by the North Carolina Biotechnology Center looking to take a more involved position in the industry and assist its growth. The group is tailored toward the clinical trial management companies in the CRO space, which involves regional giants such as Equivia and PRA Health Sciences. Vivian Doling, the Vice President for Emerging Company Development at NC Biotech, says the point was to gather information and discover what was giving the industry heartburn and what could be done to assist. What has become the dominant activity of our mission is workforce development, she says. The group's mission statement is now to create a forum to enhance communication between the CRO industry and the academic institutions statewide to improve and expand workforce development in North Carolina. Early on, that mandate has led to the center creating job profiles of entry-level positions in the CRO industry to try and assist educators and guide students toward the positions the companies need. It provides a tool for academic advisors or faculty members to help students understand what these careers could be, says Laura Rowley, the center's director of life sciences economic development. What we see a lot of is folks just have no idea what clinical research is, so they have no idea what the jobs actually entail. By just providing a bit more of a gradual picture of what these jobs are, you can better understand what background or training you need to have. And now we turn to Dathan Kazakh's page on the in the Triangle Business Journal on restaurants and retail. A new beginning. Durham chef Matt Kelly set to reopen restaurant after 2019 explosion. On the morning of April 10, Durham chef and entrepreneur Matt Kelly was walking to his car for his daily workout at the YMCA when he got a call from one of his cooks at St. James Seafood. "There's been an explosion," the chef said, with the line then going dead. Terrified, Kelly called back and found out no one at his restaurant was injured, but damage from the blast at the Brightleaf District, which killed two people, had been extensive. "In terms of structural damage, we were really lucky," he says. "We had only minor breakage inside the restaurant. However, explosion debris came into the restaurant via the kitchen vents and major cleaning was required. St. James Seafood was closed for 9 months. Now, after excruciating months of repair and waiting, St. James Seafood will reopen this month. With very minimal changes since its closure, Kelly confirms that, "We're going to open up for Sunday brunch. We're working on some fun new additions to the menu. It's going to be a lot of fun." At the time of the explosion, Kelly employed 30 people. Despite being closed for 9 months, the restaurant continued to pay the staff because of its insurance policy. "Despite that, we've lost more than half the staff, and we're hiring new staff for the reopening, including an executive chef," he says. Kelly, who is the proprietor of other Durham mainstays such as Vin Rouge, Mateo, Lucky's Delicatessen, and Mothers and Sons, admits that owning a handful of restaurants is indeed challenging. His advice to others? "I tell them to have to work hard, not only inside the restaurant, but outside the restaurant," Kelly says. "I tell them being a chef doesn't make you a good owner, and being an owner doesn't make you a good chef. Being a chef means understanding the foundations of culinary technique, cookery, products, how to manage people, how to lead a team, how to run a great service, and having the drive to do that every day." Coffee roaster offering brewing class in Durham. Joe Van Gogh, a Hillsboro coffee roaster and retailer, will add to its repertoire in 2020 when it offers its first brewing classes. The classes will focus on brewing with the Chemex coffee maker. The Chemex is the manual pour-over style glass coffee maker with a distinctive design that has inspired the common pour-over method. The January 16 class will include a 12-ounce bag of coffee and coupons for discounts on coffee. The class will be at Joe Van Gogh Woodcroft in Durham at 5:45 p.m. Joe Van Gogh was founded in 1994 by Robbie Roberts. Veteran Durham chef gives food predictions for 2020. Food and wine will have many fads in 2020, and some will fade away quickly. So Triangle Business Journal reached out to Durham's Jason Cunningham, executive chef at the Washington Duke Inn and Golf Club, to see what three trends he believes will hold true for 2020 and beyond. 1. Greater focus on plant-based diets and alternatives. Diners are driving red meat out of their diets and incorporating vegetarian and pescatarian practices into their lifestyles, particularly due to both health and environmental concerns. 2. Menu labeling and insight into ingredients. People want to know what's in their food. There's a renewed wave of diners being conscious about their health, so they want to know all of the elements of a dish, including nutritional value, potential allergens, and sourcing. 3. CBD at the table. One of the biggest trends is cannabidiol, or CBD. We've already seen the ingredients make their way into beverage options, but there's potential for CBD to sneak onto plates as well in 2020. Wine School offers Taste of Argentina, Italy in classes. Vitus House, the Raleigh-based wine school located at Loading Dock Raleigh, has opened its registration for 2020. Classes for January and February are set, and during those 2 months, one can learn about Malbec and empanadas in a taste of Argentina in January, and caviar, Iberico, and bubbles, as well as romantic reds and the unique grape varieties of Italy in February. Vitus House also offers courses for the WSET, Wine and Spirit Education Trust, levels 1 through 3. Owner Doreen Colondres says she is blown away by the positive response since opening in September. Al's Burger Shack files for bankruptcy protection. This article is written by Lauren Onasorge. Amid an ongoing expansion, entities behind all three Al's Burger Shack locations in Chapel Hill have filed for bankruptcy reorganization. Al's, which has locations on Chapel Hill's Franklin Street and at Southern Village and Governor's Village, filed 3 separate Chapter 11 bankruptcy petitions for each restaurant. The Franklin Street location, referred to as AJEM Hospitality in the filing, lists assets of less than $50,000 on liabilities ranging between $500,000 and $1 million. The other two locations, filed as Southern Village Shack and Governor's Club Shack, list the same assets to liabilities range, and all three are signed by company manager Al Bowers and filed by the same attorney, Chapel Hill's John Paul H. Cornure of Northern Blue LLP. In a statement provided by its attorney, Al's writes, "While sales are strong at our three locations, we overextended during expansion and need protection and relief while we reorganize. As grateful as we were to have received accolades in recent years, we're even more so to have been afforded this opportunity to regroup. Rest assured, we have absolutely no plans to stop slinging burgers and hope to see you at Al's soon." Cornoyer, in an email, said Al's obtained high-interest loans as part of its expansion, blaming the loans for the current situation. "The restaurants are strong businesses, and if it were not for these loans, the companies would be healthy," he writes. "This is precisely the type of problem that Chapter 11 bankruptcy is designed to fix. I feel confident in our ability to successfully reorganize and that Al's Burger Shack will be around for years to come." The biggest creditors appear tied to the entity behind the Franklin Street location, including nearly $250,000 listed as owed to the Internal Revenue Service as payroll taxes, and a distributed debt to Joe Nanny Minardi and Nanny, PLLC, for $105,000 in physical assets like equipment and furnishings. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the Viewpoint Editor's Notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "Businesses Should Follow Five Things in 2020. With the new year come new goals for businesses. There are no shortcuts to success and excellence, but one must also understand that despite the good intentions of executing a well-thought-out business plan, results could be left wanting. So how do we try to mitigate the risks and unintended consequences that could affect our operations and our workforces in 2020? Right now, the 2020 goals should look daunting for all businesses. If they don't, executives did not aim high enough. In the triangle, we know the healthcare, higher education, and the government sectors play a big part in determining the success of most businesses operating out of the Raleigh-Durham area. So what requires attention for businesses in 2020? Here are five things that may help with the decision-making process. Employees. Pay closer attention to your workers. Work habits vary widely. Don't manage people with cookie-cutter methods that you may have gathered or read in fancy consultancy reports. It may sound good, but does not work over the long term. When the labor market is tight, workers have choices. The only unique choice you can present to your employees is that their work matters for the company and the community. Give them a broader purpose. Connect the dots for them as to how their work could affect people downstream. If you think about it for just another 5 minutes, you would see every product and service produced by a company serves a purpose. If it didn't, the company would fail. Fine-tune that purpose and communicate it better to the people making those products or offering those services. And remember, it is impossible to achieve your 2020 goals alone. You need others. Wall Street. The country is in the middle of the longest economic expansion in its history. There may not be a recession in 2020, but things can change dramatically if there is a war or a crippling trade dispute. Even if you are a local business catering to the state or regional markets, it will affect you. And that's because your partners, vendors, and suppliers are most likely to change the terms of business. So follow the financial markets as closely as you can. Start by keeping tabs on broader economic indicators, the Federal Reserve's quarterly Beige report, and the inside story on the Labor Department's monthly employment report. Make time to read beyond the top line unemployment rate and total employment numbers. Elections. This is going to be an outlier this year, of course. Inevitably, things are going to go crazy starting in second quarter, and the Democrats and the Republicans will suck the oxygen out of almost anything until November. If you rely on contracts from government agencies, nail them down as soon as you can. The closer we get to November, the less likely the chance of agencies signing new contracts. The government year runs from October to December. Local government policies. For Wake, Durham, and Orange County businesses, this is a critical year to set the tone for what our elected leaders need to do to improve the local business environment. Still, too many of our successful businesses have chosen not to get involved in local rules, regulations, and initiatives because it really doesn't affect them. That apathy actually hurts all of us. We need stronger business voices in city council and county commissioners' meetings. Businesses employ people who pay taxes, and businesses build things and pay property taxes. Government uses that money to offer services to its citizens. This civic circle must have a louder voice from business owners and executives. In the end, the community benefits. And finally, cash. Start hoarding. It does not mean stop spending, but for every dollar earned, consider setting aside an additional 20% from the budget figures. I think businesses are entering a phase where the capital markets are showing signs of drying up, meaning loans, investments, and grants are coming under additional scrutiny. Of course, this does not apply to research and development companies like life sciences and tech, since most of them really have minimal revenue and they rely on venture capital and private equity to forward the progress of their product or service. But if the capital spigot is being turned counterclockwise, stretching that dollar is critical for these firms. Otherwise, you risk losing your business or selling it to someone in a fire sale. As the old saying goes, may you live in interesting times. And now we turn to the small business section to read James Lee's column. James Lee is a family business speaker, advisor, and author. The headline, New Year is a reminder to get serious about planning. I have a tradition of writing my New Year's column about something momentous that will be coming up when the calendar turns over. One year was the threat of a global Y2K computer crash. Another year was the prospect of the Super Bowl or the World Series being canceled because owners and players were in a spitting contest. When I take politics off the board, the most momentous things I see for 2020 are the opportunities for family companies to really sharpen their axe. As we enter 2020 and usher in a new decade, here are some suggestions for getting that done. Get serious about marketing. My first real job in retail was in a musical instrument store whose owner thought marketing meant staying open 9 hours a day and sitting in the store window looking prosperous. That enterprise lasted about as long as ice cream on a Key West sidewalk. Some family-owned businesses jolly themselves into thinking that being warm and friendly are good substitutes for being creative and proactive in using their family-owned and operated marketing advantage. Your marketing approach can be proud without being sappy, aggressive without being fierce. But get real about what's required to survive and thrive in the New Year's marketplace and get serious in 2020 about marketing your family business. Get serious about written business policies and standardized procedures. Here it comes again, one of my favorite sermon topics. Make 2020 the year your family-owned company stops flying by the seat of its britches with all the risks that go along with that management style and get policies, procedures, and priorities into writing. Hire a consultant or set up an inflexible internal schedule for developing a policies and procedures manual. Get the draft checked by an attorney, then make it available to family members, employees, prospective employees, and anyone else with a legitimate interest in how your business operates. Don't let another year go by without protecting your business and making your life easier by putting your business practices on paper. Get serious about continuity and succession. Lots of people, including yours truly, I'm afraid, sometimes use those two terms interchangeably. But they mean different things. Continuity refers to sustaining the business and the family's ownership of it. The family's decision to support the continuity of a business can involve bringing in non-family management or even selling a minority ownership interest to other investors. Succession refers to the transfer of the business's management and leadership to the next generation of family members. Both continuity and succession require careful analysis and planning by the senior owners and others. This is the year when you really should get serious about getting those processes underway. Get serious about networking with other family businesses. Networking is getting easier to do because of the rise of family business forums, institutes, and centers around the country. But there are still too many family-owned companies that labor on in splendid isolation, missing the many benefits of sharing experiences, ideas, and resources with other families in business. Take the time and make the investment to join a family business forum in your area. Check the website of Family Business Magazine for some good opportunities. Watch for conferences, seminars, and other events designed for family businesses and attend them. You'll probably learn something that improves your company's performance and your satisfaction in running it. And you'll link up with other business-owning families, which is one of the important things to get serious about. So if we can survive the impending political turmoil, let's make the best use of the new year by getting serious about getting our family businesses into a little better shape in 2020. And now we'll return to the Viewpoint page to read a Viewpoint column written by Mike Waldrum, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Vidant Health. The headline, Time to Fix and Strengthen North Carolina's Rural Healthcare Policies. As we start a new year in North Carolina, it is important to concentrate on the health of our communities. It is time for those having the power to influence health care in the state to work together. We must collaborate and develop thoughtful solutions designed to improve access to high-quality care. This is important everywhere in our state, especially in our rural communities. Delivering health care in the rural parts of North Carolina is a challenge for many reasons. A high burden of disease, an underserved population, and a growing number of patients relying on Medicare and Medicaid. Despite these challenges, Vidant Health is delivering quality care in the East, but we need the right policies to ensure those in our communities are supported and have access to the professionals they rely on for care. In 2019, the state watched as labor and delivery services closed in neighboring rural communities. This is tragic. No mother should have to worry about how she is going to get care or where she will deliver her baby. We see hospitals in rural parts of the country continuing to close, and North Carolina is not immune. This continues to be a crisis, and we must do better. For Eastern North Carolina, expanding Medicaid, designing a reasonable solution to resolve state health plan liabilities, and funding a new Brody School of Medicine at East Carolina University must be a priority for the state. Expanding Medicaid will improve access to care, something we desperately need not only in the East, but also throughout the state. North Carolinians are subsidizing care in 37 other states that have expanded Medicaid, while too many North Carolinians struggle. A willingness by the Treasurer and State Employees Association of North Carolina, SEANC, S-E-A-N-C, to work together with care providers across our state is vital to finding the right solutions for the state health plan. This collaboration will not only resolve liabilities, but also protect, not hurt, access to quality care for millions. We must invest in solutions such as value-based care to keep people from getting sick and to keep them out of hospitals, ultimately reducing cost. Prioritizing the funding for the Brody School of Medicine will ensure we have future generations of providers trained to meet the challenges of providing care in rural communities. The state needs more, not fewer, providers committed to meeting our health care needs, and no one does it better than Brody. And we'll stop there. As the author states, we need to come together, put aside partisanship, and create a better health care system for everyone in North Carolina. And we have run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.